eso.
I don't know that for sure. So I taught it as well. Must, because I taught it very soon.
Later.
All right, everybody, it looks like we've got a good group here, so let's go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome everybody to UAF Faculty Senate meeting number 182.
How'd you do that?
Oh, my.
All right, with that, let's go ahead and get started. Jane, could you call the roll, please?
Abramovich. Alexia.
Here.
Arendt. Anyone here for Anthony Arendt? Bates. Baker. Is June Watabe here for Carrie?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. Bando Pache, Barbosa, anyone here for Perry Barbosa, Brett Hart,
I'm here.
Okay, Brian Rasley is here for Stoney, Brown,
here,
Cahill,
here,
Davis,
here,
Fallon,
here.
George Bettisworth?
Here.
Golut?
Here.
Gustafson?
Here.
Healy?
Here.
Henry?
Here.
Himmelblum?
Here.
Thank you. Horstmann?
Here.
Jensen?
Kathy Arndt is here.
Kathy Arndt is here for Karen. Johnston.
Here.
Jolie. Yes. Jones.
Present.
Lardon.
Here.
Lawler.
Here.
Mathis.
I'm here on the phone.
Thank you. McCachern.
Hello?
Okay, Diane's on. Metzger. Anyone here for Andrew Metzger? Meyer. I thought I saw Franz Meyer. He's here. Okay. Moses. Anyone here for Deborah? Okay. Nadine. Elizabeth Nadine. Anybody here for Elizabeth? Newberry.
Here.
Chungfeng. Radenbo.
Here.
Rennis.
Here on the phone. Jane, I can't hardly hear you.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. Not sure what I can do about it. Does this help if I just talk louder?
It helps a lot. Thank you.
Okay, sorry.
It is a lot better.
Sorry about that. Reynolds?
Here.
Short?
Here.
Yeah, thanks for speaking up. Just let me know anytime. Valentine?
Here.
Weber?
Here.
Winfrey?
Here.
Zhang? Anyone here for Shang? Okay. Recognizing our ex officio members, we have Melanie Arthur.
Here.
Mike Ernest.
Here.
Do we have anyone from staff council, Pips or Joella? ASUS. We see Robert Snard. Dean Lair.
Here.
Associate Dean Hartman. Here. Is our chancellor yet? Susan Henrich is here. Dana Thomas, past president John Dean.
All right, moving on. Hopefully everyone has had a chance to look at the meeting minutes for meeting 181. Does anyone have any corrections to the meeting minutes? Hearing none, let's go ahead and call them approved and move on to adoption of agenda. Are there any changes you'd like to see in today's agenda? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move on to status of Chancellor's office actions. All of the motions we put forward have been approved, and we have nothing pending at the moment, so we're making good progress getting stuff through the Chancellor's office. And that brings us to my comments. My comments today are primarily going to deal with stuff that has kind of come from statewide. We've got the eLab Task Force recommendations that were developed and have been circulated. We've gotten some very good input, which led to a revised set of recommendations, which is what you have today in your agenda. Take a look at that, and please, if you have any other comments about whether or not you think this is doable or you think that there's something in the process that should be improved, please get comments to us ASAP. This will be something the Faculty Senate will be picking up at our next meeting. So the sooner you can get comments to us, the better. The second thing is the Complete College America, and I've mentioned this before. This is a program that the governor and the legislature would like us to sign on to go ahead and basically agree that we will do certain things to improve the completion rate for students. And this is something that Faculty Alliance asked the president to give us a charge to go ahead and take a look at. We got the charge, and it has a due date of May 15th. So that translates to we need to move fairly quickly. This is fairly important because it could, if we agree to sign on, we agree to do some things, the legislature agrees to do some things, and we want to make sure that what we're agreeing to is appropriate for our students, is appropriate for some of the things we do, like allowing Alaska Native languages to substitute for some of our core, things along those lines. We want to make sure that what we're agreeing to is not going to get us into any trouble, make us feel like we're either watering down courses or we're doing something we don't feel is appropriate for our students. it's important, and so I'm asking CORE, Curricular Review, SADA, Faculty Affairs, if you guys could all look at it. I'd like everybody to look at it, but if those committees in particular could give it a really quick look and say, yes, we agree with the basic principles, or no, we have some serious issues, we would really appreciate it so that we can get back to the president in a timely manner. So I really would like it if you'd put that as a priority to try to get it to comments to us before the May 7th, which is our next faculty Senate meeting, so that we can then get it into Faculty Affairs and get a response back to the president by May 15th. That's all I'm going to address. Are there any questions for me?
Yes, Kathy. I've read through it admittedly quickly, but all I've seen is blah, 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 not we agree to do X, we agree to do Y, we agree to do Z. Can somebody put together a list of the explicit or implicit we agree to do X, Y, and Z regarding this thing?
That's part of what we've been trying to get together. And one of the associated documents that goes with this with the time is our enemy does have some suggestions on what to do.
Yes, but they're suggestions. Suggestions are meaningless. I mean, suggestions are like, you know, like, well, gee, you know, we suggest you make the climate warmer, you know. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, but if there are things in there that the legislature can point out and say we want you to do this particular thing of these suggestions, we want to make sure that we say yes or no, we agree with this particular one. So, for example, one that kind of concerns me is they would like you to really put your developmental coursework into your freshman courses. I consider that a watering down of what I'm doing and that it doesn't serve the student well because they don't have the background. So I have an issue with that particular suggestion. So I want to make sure in any response we get back to the president, you know, that we say these particular suggestions are unworkable or we do not favor. So that even though it's blah, 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 we can point and say, well, this blah gets us into trouble and we refuse to do this blah because it, you know, interferes with our academic ethics.
Okay. So, Susan, you're going to...
There are actually some specific requirements. This document was discussed at some length at SAC and President's Cabinet. But most of the specific requirements have to do with reporting and data collection. And you have to dig to find those, but they can be found, and if Kathy isn't able to locate them, I'll dig them out again. As Kathy says, the rest of the things are couched as suggestions or best practices, and the difficulty does arise if someone, either in the legislature or at statewide, or someone who has authority over us, or at least strings on the, able to tug the purse strings, if someone decides that some of these suggestions should be requirements when they're not necessarily things that we would academically want to do.
Okay, so someone's putting together a list of this whole business that we can then check off essentially, yes?
I can work on getting that done. Any other questions for me? Nope, then let's hand it on over to Jennifer.
Excuse me. I just want to mention one item. The election results and committee assignments for next year's Faculty Senate are not yet completed because we're still waiting for election results from several of the units. So the committee assignments will be done by email, and we'll have all of that ready for next meeting in May.
All right. Any questions for Jennifer?
Nope. And Susan, is it my understanding the Chancellor can't make it today?
So the Chancellor is unable to make it today, so we'll go ahead and move on to comments by our Provost.
Thank you. First, I'll take an area which would normally be the Chancellor's to talk about the progress of the budget in the legislature. So far, it's been progressing quite well, better than expected. Many of our increment requests are included in either the House or the Senate version of the budget or both. We also are getting support. It's not exactly clear exactly the amount, but we are getting support for the idea that the state should cover our extraordinary fuel costs as the fuel cost of fuel keeps rising. And so we should get some increments. the support that many people and many of their acquaintances and supporters and business partners in the community have given to many of the university's requests has been very positive. The capital budget is now under consideration, and we hope that those positive supporters will continue to help us get items included that are very important for the university's future progress. On a related but different subject, we're going to be working on our budgeting for FY13 and the budget request for FY14, the request to the Board of Regents and then to the legislature. And that's being done with the Planning and Budget Committee, which has faculty, staff, and administrator representation, as has been done in past years. But the committee has been restructured in order to be better aligned with the core themes of the accreditation process, because one of the recommendations that we got after our accreditation site visit was that we did need to clearly align our budget allocation processes with our core themes and objectives. And so now the Planning and Budget Committee has people who are members of the committee as a whole, but those are subdivided into subcommittees that correspond to each core theme. So each core theme plus a group that is working on resources and capacity, broad areas like computing and IT, library facilities, and so forth. Each of those groups will make some recommendations for criteria that will help us set budget priorities. And then the committee as a whole will work on setting the budget priorities both for FY13 in terms of any reallocations that occur and in terms of what we will make as requests to the legislature for FY14. So you'll be provided through the administrative committee with more information about that process as it occurs, mostly through the month of April and the first 2 weeks in May. We need to get a budget request to statewide fairly early in the summer, probably about mid-June. At least they'll be looking for drafts of that from us. So I'll stop there. If anyone has any questions about my remarks, I'd be glad to try to answer.
Any questions for Susan? Nope. Then let's go ahead and move on to Vice Provost Dana Thomas's remarks.
Thank you. So happy to see the resolution to endorse the UAF mission statement here. This draft mission statement was based on about 460 responses to the mission survey that was distributed. So thank you if you responded to that and provided your input on it. I want to thank Eric Madsen and Kathy and Jennifer for arranging and hosting the electronic faculty activity vendor presentations that we had over the last 2 weeks. Very valuable input. Got a lot of faculty questions to those vendors and clarified some of the issues with them. And then the last thing is just an informative piece. My office continues to support revision of the core curriculum. We've got five faculty members, four faculty members and myself, going to the AACU General Ed Institute in June to continue to grow from the sort of national experience in Gen Ed. So if you have questions on that, I'll be happy to take that. Thanks.
Any questions for Dana? Nope. Then let's go ahead and move on to new business. And the first item of new business is the resolution condemning the proposed tobacco user no hire policy submitted by Administrative Committee. Jennifer, do you want to take that one?
All right. This is an item that has, this is a proposed policy that hasn't been formally submitted to any of the governance groups that we are aware of. It has certainly not come to either Faculty Alliance or the Faculty Senate for a response, but it has had some publicity both within the university and I think also within the news minor there was a reference to it. So the administrative committee looked at this and was very concerned that it was not appropriate for the university. the administrative committee drew up this resolution for your consideration. We would like to have a discussion here about whether the Faculty Senate should make this statement and see how you all feel about it. The statement essentially says that the Faculty Senate would condemn the proposed policy under which the University of Alaska would not hire tobacco users or anyone whose spouse or dependents are tobacco users. And that's the phrase that's used, tobacco users. It's not limited to smoking. Discussion on this? Yes?
Yeah, I completely support that decision. When I first read about it with relation to health care costs, I thought this seemed ludicrous that you could do that. I mean, I dislike all sorts of people's personal habits that are health-related, but where do we draw the line?
Cecilia?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's a very slippery slope. It could all be stupid things. You know, that can cost a lot of money. And I think there are much more effective things.
It's difficult for us to hear on the audio conference.
Okay, is this better?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. I think that it's a very slippery slope. We all do stupid things that could potentially cost a lot of money, and it keeps certain people out of the UAF workplace. And I think the institution can do a lot more effective things to curb healthcare costs than not hire smokers. There's plenty of research that shows that in other countries where people smoke a lot, they're not less healthy, but they do other things that we're not doing. So, there are other things we could be doing.
This is Steve Brown and Palmer. I had a question. Did it read that if a family member, did that include family members who are smokers as well?
It includes dependents. So if the family member is on the, well, spouse or dependent. That was the
so point. Let's say your wife smokes and you don't. Does this imply that you would not be considered for a position?
Correct.
As written, yes.
Does the word ludicrous really come to mind or not? I mean.
Yeah, I could see an argument for, denying someone who smokes, but I can't see doing it, if one of their dependents that they don't have control over necessarily. That's my two cents.
Well, I'm kind of wondering also about cancer patients on medical marijuana.
Not tobacco.
Oh, I guess. Good point. Perfect. Okay, let's continue smoking. No. Good. Great.
Precisely.
That's true.
That'd be tobacco.
Anyone else? All right. Second? Does anyone need a second? All right. The motion has been called and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. Any abstentions? Motion passes unanimously. Or the resolution passes unanimously. Thank you.
All right, that moves us on to our next item of business, which is the resolution to endorse the UAF mission statement submitted by Administrative Committee, Attachment 182-2. Dana, do you want to speak to this resolution since you're the most familiar with it?
The provost and I will share conversation about this, I suppose. Mission statements are always a compromise in wording, as you might guess. The survey responses very clearly indicated that something close to what we have now, but with some revisions, was needed. And in the 75 pages of comments we received, and we read all of them, we tried to construct this based on the intent of those comments. But first, we started with the mission statement that received the greatest support, and then we looked at the comments as to what people have said, how they might change that one.
Just a quick question for you, Dana. Is this expected to be the final version that we're approving?
I can address that. The Chancellor's Cabinet has seen it and has expressed satisfaction with it. I guess I would say the when you get more than one person looking at the mission statement, you're always going to have two different versions that are perfect. But
David, come on in.
The Cabinet has agreed that they are satisfied collectively.
Okay, good, because I am...
The last remaining hurdle before we take it to the SAC, the System Academic Council, and to the Board of Regents for approval.
Any other questions or comments about the mission statement?
I have some comments, actually. I forwarded the mission statement to our faculty and got some responses. My concern with the mission statement is that it does not reflect anything creative.
Speaking of medicine.
Yeah. This mission statement does not reflect any kind of creative activity that is at our university. And so I have a couple comments here from other faculty members. One says, because the arts are an essential and vibrant part of life in all of Alaska, playing a vital role in life from the native Alaska families to life in our cities, it cannot be left out of the university's mission statement. What would Alaska be without our drummers, dancers, artisans, musicians, actors, and artists? Our life here in Alaska is giving meaning and expression in the arts in a way that is more integral and vibrant than I've experienced elsewhere. People in this university are living the arts beyond our music, theater, art, and creative writing programs. Indeed, the arts happen all over the campus every day, and we practice and experience are practiced and experienced by everybody. Therefore, the arts are integral to the university's life and, by extension, its mission. I would like to add my comment that there has never been a scientific creation that is not preceded by a creative thought, and that is taught in our arts on this campus, and it is left out of this mission statement. One way to address this would be to exclude research, education, and creative activities, emphasizing the circumpolar north and its diverse people, including the two words creative activity, because it is an integral part of our campus. Whether it's a money-making venture, it is part of life in Alaska and in Fairbanks and on this campus.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Go for it.
I'd like to speak in support of what Karen just said. I've also spoken with faculty members, both within our department and in our unit. And the essential feeling is that none of us really feel as if we can support the mission statement as currently written. There is an awareness that I have that I've shared with people that there's a general tendency among what I'm broadly calling the higher-ups, and I don't mean that to disparage anybody here administratively, to imagine that research as a term is inherently meant to assume arts and creative activities. However, we haven't really seen that pay off in anything that is substantive within the university, and as such, we'd really like to see it stipulated clearly and explicitly within the mission statement.
Thank you. Elizabeth?
Well, I just wanted to comment. I thought, Karen, you just said that research is a creative activity, right? It's inspired by creativity. And so, I mean, I'm not, I will admit, I'm not in the arts, but I read it that research on campus involves all the things that you talked about from the native crafts and culture, that there's research associated with that and associated with arts and other types of cultural activities. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with actually everything that has been said so far. I would point out that the discussion we had last year about the core themes, the Faculty Senate's big sticking point on the proposed core themes was that they initially tried to separate creative activities and research, and the Faculty Senate insisted that these were part of the same family of activities, and that creativity came into research and vice versa. But I also agree that your average reader outside of the university who's not in on the way these terms are used
would not necessarily understand that. And the mission statement is also directed to people outside the university. So I would support adding the phrase that Karen suggested.
Dana?
So I just want to thank you both for taking this back to your faculty, getting the input. That's very valuable to us. Sincerely appreciate it. The one element that I would raise is the Faculty Senate approved a change from the Discover theme to a Research theme. And that theme includes creative activity with the leading word research. So while I appreciate what you're arguing, there's a little bit of counter argument from the Senate's previous action.
Dana, Matt, can I respond to that?
Sure.
Those core themes were meant for internal use and for the accreditation process. The mission statement, as I see it, is meant for an external audience. And so I see these as, because the audiences are different, we need to be clearer in our language with the mission statement.
Any other discussion?
Yeah, and I can see the point that a lot of people from the community come onto campus solely to enjoy, you know, cultural or artistic events.
Stephen?
I fully respect that whole the themes discussion did in fact address this issue, and that the Senate in a majority setting did in fact embrace that theme. I'd just like to say that the people who I feel as if I represent at this table were not of that particular mind. And so in terms of representing them, and certainly in terms of representing my own heart and my own belief here, I have to still respectfully stand in the minority, if that is a minority. So.
Any other comments or questions? Do we have anyone who'd be interested in doing a friendly motion to amend the UAF mission statement as presented here?
I don't think this is the right place for making some last-minute changes, which are actually of significant magnitude. I mean, honestly, what this says is take it back, play with it some more. I think that's the way I'm reading it.
Yeah. I would request to get some clear direction from the Senate at this point. Because we need to take this to the Board of Regents in June in order to be able to present it at or to turn it into the accrediting organization in August. And the timelines for the Board of Regents have grown a lot in recent years, so that we have to submit anything that's going to go before the board at least 6 weeks out. So we don't have a tremendous amount of time to revise again and bring it back to you, especially if we're not absolutely sure whether or not the majority of the Senate wants the creative activities phrase included and otherwise. So what would be better from my standpoint is that there be a vote on a proposed amendment. If people would like to amend the mission statement, that's certainly within your authority and what we would like you to do if you're not satisfied with the current one. So if you want to amend it, that's possible. If you don't want to amend it, that's also fine.
I think the key question here is whether or not the mission statement has to explicitly say art.
Okay, let's find out. So,
yeah.
Proposed amendment to...
And again, let's not worry about the wording. The question is, does the mission statement have to explicitly say the word art?
Well, let's test that by amending it and see if we get a majority vote in favor of amending it. Okay? All right. So, the... modification would be UAF integrates teaching, research, creative activities, and public service as it educates students for active citizenship, etc.
I actually think the proposed amendment was different, but I'll let Karen.
So, well, because Karen didn't volunteer an amendment, I'm trying to.
Oh, actually, I have one right here. The amendment that I propose is wording as such, and it's just one simple thing. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is a land, sea, and space university and an international center for research, education, and creative activities emphasizing the Circuit Polar North and its diverse people and everything else.
Thank you. I think you did read that, and I didn't understand what part of the motion it went into. All right. So,
second.
Is there discussion on this motion? The motion to amend? Yes.
Cindy? I would take it further and use the word the arts, or the words the arts, rather than creative activity.
Creative arts?
No. The arts, as in?
Research, education, and the arts? Some discussion on this?
I would say if it was creative activities, that could be in any anything that we do across the board, whether it's engineering creative activities or extension creative activities, whereas arts would be specific, I would think, to one particular department. And then why don't we list everybody?
Other discussion? Yes.
So I'm on accreditation committee as well, and I feel it needs more work, actually, in the committee. More wording needs to be done, more work.
Any comments or further discussion on the amendment as Karen has read it?
Just a procedural question. This is a resolution where we're getting a sense of the Faculty Senate going forward, correct? We're not actually making a decision. We're making our preferences known with respect to how the mission statement is worded.
Yes, but it's also quite important whether the Faculty Senate endorses this or not.
Granted. I understand. It's just that if we don't get the word exactly right, if the Faculty Senate comes out with a resolution that says we want the term creative activity included in or the arts or whatever the amendment winds up being, there is an opportunity for that to be crafted a little bit more after this. Is that correct or not?
No, I think we need to be careful what we do here. And I was going to recommend that if we agree on this change that Karen has proposed, that we then amend the first sentence to read, and this is just part of our discussion right now, but I would suggest later on we amend the first sentence to read, the UAF Faculty Senate recommends the following revised UAF mission statement. Because we would not be recommending the one that the Chancellor and Provost have sent to us. It would be slightly revised from that. But I think we need to be careful what we do today because we're coming down to the wire on this and we may not have another chance at this.
Just to clarify where the wording creative activity actually originates, it's in our previous mission statement under Discover in the core theme, and that is Discover. True research, scholarship, and creative activity, including an emphasis on the North. So that's the word expressed from our previous mission statement. And nowhere in this statement do I see, and I'm just scanning it right now, the word art. It simply says creative activity.
Elizabeth?
Sorry. I also I like arts more than creative activity because of the first point that research involves creative activity, so it's somewhat redundant to me.
Any other? Go ahead, Steve.
Can I just ask a point of procedure here? I'm curious whether I know that there's a motion on the table, but if we were to look at an amendment on the table. If we looked at the underlying motion, and if the Senate were actually to reject that motion. Given the record of the conversation that's gone on here, would that actually give the provost and the administration enough of what the sense of the Senate is in order to be able to make the appropriate changes?
Susan, would you like to handle that one?
I'm afraid that there have been several ideas put forward, the two that are different, and I haven't really achieved the sense of the Senate yet. Creative activity has support, the arts has support, and I believe there's some support for leaving it as it is, although not too vocally expressed as yet. And among those three options, I would really like to see what the majority prefers. I hope there aren't any more options, but.
Well, how many senators are there here? That's how many more options there are.
Probably. But I at least need to get the input of whether the Senate, as a group, prefers approximately the wording as it is, or definitely wants insertion of creative activity, or maybe something about the arts.
I guess to me, I don't feel like I'm really qualified to distinguish between creative activities and the arts. I'm looking to the representatives of that portion of campus that deals with that on an everyday basis. This is what they see as their mission. They object to the absence of those, of either of those, in the proposed mission statement, and they have suggested creative activities. I'm sort of leaning towards just deferring to what it is that they're saying that their faculty sees as necessary.
Any other discussion? Can we get a call? Let's.
I'll just add in and say that I, in answer to your question, David, I haven't polled the faculty. I can give my own personal perception and a belief that I hold from having spoken to them that, creative activity, in my opinion, feels a little pablumish and always has. So personally, I would prefer the arts, and I project that I believe my colleagues would prefer the same. But creative activity, based on what it means and how it's been used historically here, would be a really fine approach to the problem.
Cindy, so let me speak to the arts, since I'm not in a department that is involved with the arts, but have degrees that do. And the departments that I see that involve the arts are English with creative writing, which is a specific discipline, the visual arts, theater, music, film. What else have we got? I mean, we have several departments, of course, all with liberal arts. I also want to speak to as someone with a long history here at the university, both as a former student and now faculty. I've seen a time when the arts were a primary, very strong part of who we were and who our identification was as a university, not just to the local community, but internationally. And putting the word the arts back in this statement would indicate that there is support in the university for that happening again, or at least for what we have in the arts. Saying creative activity could be, I agree with you, it could be any one of a range of things. It's part of research, and I think we should make clear distinctions. And I'm sorry I didn't speak up when this other discussion was having here, but I'm serving as an alternate today, so I have the right to speak. Okay, I think, Dana.
I just want to. I understand the motivation. I'm happy you're having this conversation. I'd like to point out, humanities are not listed here. Social sciences are not listed here. Science is not listed here. There's major field areas that we would generally consider. So keep that in mind, and as you think about it.
One more comment. But my distinction would be that in those fields you mentioned, research happens as research, but within the arts, it's completely different type of activity.
And I'd like to point out, in just looking at our, criteria for promotion and tenure, we do distinctly say research and creative activity, because our research isn't defined the same as everybody else's research within the arts. I'm happy, actually, I'm kind of thinking about this. This is brainstorming. What about creative art? Or is that too?
Well, I think that's a double. I mean,
it's the
same thing.
Frankly, I don't care if it's creative activity or arts, whatever people are comfortable with, but I just think something needs to be included.
All right, just to get a sense here, because we're having this discussion and we really kind of need to move along if we're going to get through stuff. What I think I'd like to do is get a show of hands of how many people would prefer arts and how many people would prefer creative activities. Whichever one comes out top on that one, then go ahead and put that in the amendment, then go ahead and vote on the amendment that's on the floor. Okay, creative arts. So we've got three options. You have creative activity, arts, creative arts. So what I'm going to ask is for a show of hands of each one. I'll go ahead and count. The people who are online, I will ask for a verbal yes so I can count you. So just try not to all talk at the same time.
sorry. I think you should add as a fourth, not changing it, because there might be some people who don't want to change it.
Well, that's going to be the thing. We're going to do the vote on the amendment, which has the change, and if that goes down, then we'll vote on the original mission statement. So basically, we have a decision in terms of arts, creative arts, and creative activities. Then we have a vote on the amended, and then we have a vote on the original, if needed. All right, we all clear on this now, I think? All right, so first off, show of hands, how many people would like this to read art? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 13 in the room, how many people online would like to have it be art?
Yes.
One.
Diane, yes. Diane McGachran, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mike Davis, yes.
Okay. Anyone else online who'd like it to read art? All right. How many people are interested in reading creative activity? 1, 2, 3, 11. 11 plus how many online would like to have it read creative art, creative activity?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yes.
Any others? Lastly, who would like it to read creative arts? Anybody online? Yeah, we eliminated one. That's good. The bad news is that the vote happens to be 16-14. So,
doesn't this seem a little crazy? I mean, here we are, 30 faculty members who are supposedly deciding what our mission statement little tweaks are going to look like. I mean, a mission statement is kind of like a football team in the lower 48. Every college has to have one, or it's not really a college. But doesn't that have to be particularly good? I mean, let's move on this thing, for Christ's sake.
Well, we're now at a point where, because Art got 16 votes, we're going to have the amendment on the floor, I think, be that the UAF Senate recommends the following revised UAF mission statement. The University of Alaska Fairbanks is a land, sea, and space grant university and an international center for research, education, and the arts, emphasizing the circumpolar north and its diverse peoples, and then the remaining sentence being the same. So that is the current motion on the floor. Do we have a call to question?
Question.
Second? All right. All those in favor, please say, actually, let's go ahead and, because of the back and forth, let's go ahead and do a hand vote, and then we'll get to online. So everyone here in favor of the amended resolution, please. In favor of making the amendment to this resolution, please raise your hand. Mm-hmm. 18. And online?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Anyone else online in favor?
Fine, yes.
Anyone else? All those opposed, please raise your hand. Anyone online opposed? And any abstentions? And any online? All right. With that, the motion to amend passes 18-16-2. So at that point, we have then that. Now, okay, so now we're to considering the full resolution that we go ahead and approve the revised resolution. So it's the UAF Faculty Senate recommends the following revised UAF mission statement. And as we just read it, all those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Yes.
I was going to say, we just appear to have one opposed. Anyone online opposed?
Or two.
All those opposed, put your hands up, please. Okay.
Oh,
four. All right.
Four.
And anyone online opposed? Any abstentions? 1, 2, 3. Four abstentions. Anyone online doing an abstention? All right. With that, the motion passes for the revised mission statement wording. All right. That takes us to the next issue, which is the election of the 2012-2013 UAF Faculty Senate President-elect, attachment 182-3. Jane is going to pass out the ballots. All those of you who... Yeah, I was going to say, all those of you who are online who have not voted, now is your time. You're hearing Jeopardy music in the background. So please get your email into Jane ASAP. Jane is now coming around with the handy-dandy box. All right, all the votes have been collected, so Jane will work on tallying those. In the meantime, let's go ahead and move on to the motion to confirm the nomination for the 2011-2012 Outstanding Senator of the Year, attachment 182-4. This motion, it reads, the UAF Faculty Senate moves to confirm by acclamation the nomination of David Valentine as 2011-2012 Outstanding Senator of the Year. And the rationale was that we got a single nomination, so there was no need to vote for this particular one. And so we wanted to agree that the nominee was truly outstanding, and therefore we will vote by acclamation that we think Dave really does deserve this for his outstanding work over summers, et cetera, to get faculty Senate input in a bunch of different university-wide committees. So with that, let's go ahead and have acclamation here for David Valentine as Outstanding Senator of the Year. So that may not be exactly the most orthodox passing, but so moved by acclamation. That takes us on to discussion items. The actual award will be presented at the May meeting along with the airline ticket. So, yeah. So you definitely want to compete for this one. All right. On to discussion items. The proposed ad hoc committee to review electronic faculty activity reporting software. Jennifer, you have that one.
As you all know from our previous meeting, there are right now two candidate software packages that are being discussed for adoption by the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And Faculty Senate have been asked to provide input on these and to help evaluate them. At the last meeting, I asked for a show of hands as to who would be interested in attending a demonstration of the of both software packages, and we had wide support for that. I think nearly every hand went up. So demonstrations of each were scheduled over the past 2 weeks, and we had a handful of faculty attend each one. So because we didn't have wide attendance, we are suggesting that or recommending that instead of having the full Faculty Senate make a recommendation on these two pieces of software, instead we assign this task to the faculty who attended the demonstrations and can provide an informed assessment. And that's what this ad hoc committee would be. We have identified who has been at each of these demonstrations, and we would ask them for specific detailed feedback on behalf of all the faculty.
Seem appropriate for everyone?
Okay.
Elizabeth?
Yeah, I just want to say I attended the first one through phone or computer, and I couldn't make it to the second one because it conflicted with something already scheduled. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was – obviously it's hard to accommodate everybody's schedules, but I would have been interested in attending both. I just couldn't.
Yeah, Elizabeth, and I understand that people do have schedule conflicts. We're trying this as a modified approach because – for whatever reason, people did not attend.
And we'll be asking your opinion on what you thought of that particular one. So we'll be asking for the good and the bad of the different software packages. So we really do still want your input.
Yeah, it's not limited to people who attended both. It's anyone who attended any of them. We will be asking for opinions and feedback.
Dave?
Could I ask you to name names?
The names will be withheld to protect the worthy.
No, that's fair. If we're setting up an ad hoc committee exactly. to represent the Faculty Senate on this, it's fair to ask who the people are. So from memory, and Eric can help with this, the people who have attended one or both are me, Kathy,
Margaret
Short, Elizabeth Naden, Karen Gustafson. Didn't you attend one of them? Yeah. Andrew Metzger, I believe, attended one, and we'll have to find out if it's one of those that's still in the running. I know there are other people. Who else? Oh,
yeah.
Orion, Ken Abramowicz, John Dean, who we would consult as past president. Anyone else I'm leading?
Karen Jensen and Chris Fallon.
Karen Jensen, yes. She dialed in on the same one that Elizabeth called in on. Chris Fallon.
Who actually got to hear better than we did on one of them.
Yes. That may be the list. Okay.
But as you can see, it was a fairly short list of people who participated.
And the other reason why I'm asking is just to make sure that we ensure that the campus is well represented, that the various pieces of the campus are well represented on the committee.
Well, unfortunately, we're limited to the people who actually attended the demonstration. So.
All right, so that will be something that is in the works. That takes us to kind of the next discussion item, which is the Complete College America program. That I covered in my comments, but just to reaffirm, I would like it to go to Core Curricular Review, SADA, and Faculty Alliance. So I will be putting together the list that Reiner requested in terms of what they want, and there's things about specific metrics, and then also some of the suggestions to put it together. Ryan?
Yeah, I've been flipping through this, and there's some really amazingly bold stuff in there. They actually say bold action is certainly needed. Now it's time to take bold action on health completion, which sounds good in theory. In practice, gosh, they have some really specific recommendations that, okay, so of all these, colleges should be encouraged to be responsive to all these principles, not pick and choose. So you get the whole thing if we sign up, is my impression. So 4 to 8 week terms, no semesters,
one-month or two-month terms. So in other words, take all of our curriculum and throw it away. It's no summer break, which in Alaska would be really an amazingly dramatic change. Compress classroom instruction, let's see, to reduce seat time and to improve, allow students to proceed in accelerated pace, which is really hard to do and have them actually learn the same stuff that they learned before. Embed remediation in the courses, which, I don't know, there are good things about that, but that, I mean, this is a hugely dramatic reengineering of, you know, an institution that's older than the state of Alaska. I don't know. I personally cannot support joining. I mean, if they're willing to endorse these as being, so this is one of their ways of restructuring delivery for today's students. This is one PDF that I randomly looked at, and I found lots of things I really, really object to.
Right, and that's why I'd raise some of those as issues, because, I mean, I hit that, roll the development into your freshman courses. I teach a freshman chemistry course. If I'm rolling in the remedial math and English, I've just watered down my content that is required by my accrediting body. So that's a no-go for me. And I know some other people feel the same way. But it's that type of thing that I am concerned about, that we will not be doing the right thing for our students and for our university.
Yes,
and
but if we have a specific list, we can say, no, we don't agree with this, and this.
Exactly.
I think it's much better than just saying, no, we think this is dumb.
Right, and that's what we wanted to do, is we wanted to have a very explicit set of lists and why, because it's very, very hard to argue with the gut feeling of we just don't like it. If we can make it specific, it's much easier to argue. So yes. Please take a look at that, and I will try to get a list together in terms of that document with a bunch of those recommendations, and so we can put yay, nay, we like, we don't like, and why. So that will be coming out. Any other questions on that one? All right, that takes us to break, and we are actually hitting break early, so let's try to come in early, then we can get out early. So let's meet back here at 2:10.
You were Mark President.
Now we know.
Every time you read that, how much? It might take 6 months for better. After,
water is pouring.
Yeah.
It looks like
people are extracting.
In general.
Government.
Oh, sorry. Oh.
Right.
Well, that's a whole other issue. It's whether it would be.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. One of the hazards that you ran into, I think, slowly go down. Didn't really. He was not walking at the swimming pool.
I would have found we looked at.
It's just
crazy.
Yeah, she went safety around the lake the other day. Came back at the lot. All these muscles.
Do you have the time?
I mean, but it's not
going round and round and round. And now we'll go round and round the pool. But it's an interesting question as to whether somebody would have lost the
lot. Yep. Yep.
All right, let's get everyone back to order here. All right, first things first, in terms of the election for Faculty Senate President-elect, I'd like to first off thank both of our candidates for running. It's always great to have an election with good people involved. And I would like to congratulate Dave Valentine for being elected president-elect. So be prepared. Things get a little crazy now. But
there's no turning back, Dave.
Too late.
Thank you for agreeing to do it. It actually is a lot of fun. You learn a lot. So. Moving on then to our next discussion item, it's the eLab draft policy discussion, attachment 182-5, and this is the Distance Science Lab Task Force recommendations that came to us from Faculty Alliance. We had some very good input, and especially like to thank Dean Layer for taking a good hard look at these, and we went ahead and revised them. We've kind of brought them back to Senate to talk about, do we think that this is something that is doable and it captures what we really need to be doing in terms of delivering distance labs, and if we're ready to kind of send it back to Faculty Alliance for some more iterations. Any comments or questions on the revised wording in terms of the Science Lab Task Force recommendations? Would people be comfortable with us taking them back to Alliance and saying this is where we stand at this moment? Brian?
Yeah, actually, I've taught a lot of distance classes. And it's actually pretty annoying to think that I would have to go through all of this process to
to do what I'm already doing, which has already been reviewed by my department, already been approved by my department. So if I'm reading this correctly, this says that if I'm already doing this, it's already been kind of passed through my department, then I have to do it over it. That's kind of annoying to me.
Brian, it's a little bit obscure, I admit, but part of this business about the everybody has to get approved is based upon the fact that neither Anchorage nor Juneau has done any evaluation of any of their science courses ever, whereas we have this regular College of Natural Sciences review process in place.
Yeah, my comment is still, the point is super annoying to me.
But what I'm saying
I
is, I think
work in my life.
I think you're misreading it. Okay, it's
you're
not.
Saying I don't have to do that.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
And as long as that's on the record, I'm okay.
Heck, I'll sign a piece of paper to that effect.
Yeah, really, the purpose was is because we already had a good review in place. It wasn't going to be a fact we were going to have to re-review all of them because we'd already hit all the buttons in our science core review process. It really, to be honest, was aimed at UAA and UAS.
I didn't see that in the field. It said everything.
Yes, but see, it says everybody has to go through this process. Okay, the chem courses that you've taught have gone through this review process, or essentially a review.
That's not what it says. It says everything must go through this process going forward. It doesn't say that if you've already done this stuff, you don't have to do it. Right? I don't know. Maybe I didn't read it.
It says that it have not been approved by an MAU approved process.
As far as I know, that's not true. People have done this ad hoc, kind of, already. I mean, there's no officially approved class that I know of through this process. So any existing class still has to go through the process. That's my sticking point. Personally. And I think I speak to some other people who have already taught this class, already gone through it. It would be wasteful of my time to others who have already done this. You have to redo it for the purpose of extensive records.
Has the course you've been taught been reviewed through the normal College of Natural Sciences review process?
I don't know, actually, because I don't know that we actually have that process official.
Yes, we do have a process. Basically, every course, every natural science core course is on a three-year, four-year.
Right. So, Brian, I did express this concern when I read the draft, and so a lot of what's reflected in here, especially in that one statement, is to address that comment about making sure that if we have a policy in place, we already have that in place. And so whenever you submit a course for approval or have a significant modification, it goes through the curriculum council of the college and the curriculum council of the university. Also, core classes have been reviewed and are on a rotating review every 3 years. We have a process and a policy in place to do that, and we've done that whether they're by on campus or by distance or taught elsewhere. So we are actually doing a systematic review of science classes right now. And so my reason proposed to Reiner and the way that it was rolled in there, an MAU approved process, is to allow us to keep doing what we're doing. And we do have a process in place. Now, if the Senate decides to take over core review in some other kind of capacity through the work that GIRC is doing, then that's fine with me too. But right now there is a policy that we are following, have followed for core classes, and so I don't see it making you do anything that you're not doing right now. We're asking you to evaluate your course right now.
Okay.
Well, and again, it's a three-year cycle, right, Paul?
Yeah.
And so in theory, Brian's class, which he's taught for more than 3 years, has already been through at least one cycle of CNS review.
In theory.
If it hasn't been, then it's fallen through the cracks. And perhaps it's a good time to, the rest of us have been doing these three-year reviews. So I've been having my GS 101 reviewed every 3 years on a cycle. If you haven't, then A, you've been, well, left behind somehow, and we need to make sure that it gets fixed.
So for example, right now, atmospheric science 101 has been moved from being an in-class or on-campus delivery to a distance delivery. We are going to do an evaluation of that by our process right now without creating anything along with this, but essentially we're following our process to evaluate the effectiveness of that delivery method with that course because it was a major change. And we will be doing the evaluation. We have that process and not having to create something from scratch or put every class that we do ever through a process if it's already going fine.
Any other comments or discussion on this? So the sense I get is people are comfortable with us going back to Alliance. Going here is UAF's recommendations on how to improve the process. And we'll try to make sure, Brian, that we don't add any extra onerous paperwork to the folks who are already going through it. All right. Given no more discussion, let's go ahead and go on to course catalog timelines and deadlines. This is something that I wanted to discuss with the Senate after the registrar brought it to me. When we submit a course or a program review or other major change, it's going to have to go through a bunch of different hoops before it can get approved and in the catalog. The timeline gets really tight. If you want to have something basically in the next year's catalog, you basically need to have it done by October or submitted by October to make it through all of the process with the different committees, evaluations, et cetera. So trying to get something in the spring before the fall that when you would actually have it implemented will not make it. There's just no way to do it. So if you are going to consider changing a program, et cetera, you have to look basically at least a year out in order to make it to the catalog. Now, that does raise the question, what do we need to do about the catalog? Do we want to have a fixed catalog hard copy in our hands in August like we've been getting? Do we want to go to a pseudo paperless catalog? Do we want to do an addendum where things that are approved so we can get new programs, new courses, other things in the addendum, but no major changes so you don't interfere with the catalog year for students? So if they came in under catalog, say, 2011-2012, we don't have a program change in the middle of it where suddenly they have different expectations. So that basically the addendum would only be new programs. Is this something people would like to see, an addendum where the new programs can get implemented, say, in a spring type semester? So especially with things like occupational endorsements, it would give us an opportunity to respond quickly. We get it approved. It can be added to the addendum, and people can start enrolling for it at that point.
Kathy, can I jump in for a moment,
please? Yes.
There actually has been a change, and that is that traditionally for the last bunch of decades, the new catalog for the next academic year has been available in May. What some of you may have noticed is that it's not the last couple of years been available until August. The reason for that is to give those of us who review courses and programs additional time to have those reviews done. Right now, the cutoff is essentially the 1st of March. If we were to go back to, and this is the question for the Faculty Senate, back to new catalogs available in May, that means, for example, they could be sent out to new students. Students from a given academic year could actually see what's going to be offered in the fall, all that kind of good stuff. But it would require that the deadlines for getting changes in and approved would be more like January 1st. And it would make things really crowded in terms of trying to get any kind of meaningful review of new courses, programs, changes in courses, programs, that kind of thing. So there really are two kinds of issues here, one of which is, are people okay with the fact that without actually asking you, the catalog, the new catalog now doesn't show up until August? Would you rather have it show up in May instead, given that there are costs involved with that? And B, one way around this whole catalog revisions timeline is if we simply didn't have a paper catalog, then, and if everything was electronic, an idea personally that I think is awful, then we could be literally making changes much more frequently because it's electronic. And the idea behind having a paper catalog is that it's a contract. So once it's there for the entire year. So the two questions really for discussion are, are we okay as a faculty with not having the catalog for a given year available until August? And the second question is it okay continuing with this paper catalog business given the limitations, or do people prefer an electric catalog entirely?
Cecile?
Well, I'm wondering if we're kind of tackling this problem maybe from the wrong angle. And I recognize that the committees that are involved in review are really overloaded oftentimes with the number of proposals they get and the number of documents they have to go through. And so, Reiner, I can totally see why you're saying that you guys need time to go through it. But to me, in some ways, that points to the need to streamline that process in some way, either by having perhaps different kinds of reviews go through, you know, fewer steps or something, so that in the end, in that crunch time with the end of the year, that, you know, that committee really only has to deal with things that really need to be reviewed by that committee as opposed to just about everything at this point. And, you know, to some extent I speak from the experience of the department that has totally redone its undergraduate curriculum in response to program review and all these other things we're supposed to be doing. But it's taken basically over 2 years to get it done, and that's terrible for us because we don't know what to plan for. You know, we don't know how to plan for faculty needs. We don't know how to transition. You know, so if some courses are approved but others aren't, it's really, really hard to transition to something new. But again, I sort of wonder if by kind of having the process we have right now, we're putting too much of a burden on really a fairly small group of people, and is it really necessary to review everything at all of the levels that they're being reviewed at right now? And could that be, you know, streamlined so that there isn't so much to do at the end of the year?
Really, the end of the year is not the crunch time. The crunch time is when the catalog deadline is.
Okay, whatever. Yeah, whatever
right.
That is. So is a restructuring of the process, would that help with those deadlines, as opposed to insisting that we do it the way we've always done it? I mean, is there really a need for that?
Well, it's a toughie. And certainly this is a discussion that perhaps those of us, several people like yourself and I, you know, maybe want to have outside of the Senate per se. But fundamentally, one of the issues about new courses is a change courses is it's the only time that we can actually enforce the course syllabus requirement. Faculty Senate passed a course syllabus requirement 6 or 7 years ago, and instead of having a syllabus police that goes through everybody's courses and make sure their syllabus is up to snuff, basically the time when we can make sure that it is up to Faculty Senate criteria is whenever a new course or a change course is up before the committee. Invariably, this is where we find out that the syllabus the instructor has been using for ages doesn't contain a whole lot of critical information. And getting the instructor to actually do that in some cases is problematic. And unfortunately, for a change in a program, the change in the program can't be approved until each and every one of the courses associated with that change are also approved. So you're absolutely right. Things can get really ugly in a hurry. And it is a discussion that perhaps ought to be held, you know, outside of the Faculty Senate per se, is what ways can we restructure this so it works better. But again, one of the main issues here is the fact that it's when new courses and change courses are in front that the Faculty Senate can actually enforce its
delivery. Yeah, I totally appreciate what you're saying, but right now there are at least two committees that look at each course syllabus, and it seems to me that if people are properly informed and trained, one should be enough.
Stephen?
I just want to add the issue, just to muddy the waters a little more, of advising that happens through this. Because we happen to believe that we have a fairly major curriculum change happening. We don't have assurance in any sure kind of way that it will go through, and now we're advising students. And even if it wasn't in a catalog that we can hand the students, if we had some sort of assurance that says, yes, you guys are golden, at that point, I think we're in a good place with regard to advising. Right now, we have to kind of say caveat emptor to the students and let the cards fall where they may. So.
Any other questions, comments? I'm personally one of those people who, when I advise students, I like to have the hard copy in my hand and flip back and forth. And so it would be something where if we had it in May, that would really help me. But that does mean that we would have to push deadlines back. And so really that's something to think about is, do you want, is the August okay? Or do you want to go ahead and go back to getting it in May and then maybe having the addendum? What do people think? I'm seeing a lot of shaking head no's and even more ambivalence.
August is just fine. You don't need the addendum.
Go ahead, Joanne.
Essentially, you know what's going to be in the catalog based on what's been approved by at least March 1st. If it's been approved by, if it's a new program or course approved by the Senate, it needs approval by the Board of Education and has not had the principal framework of commission, it will be in the catalog that fall. If, depending on how far it goes, you know, certain types of changes don't have to go that far. But if it's one that has to go that far, all those steps are not taken as a
Joanne?
Well, after starting a new program, I would really appreciate an addendum because I was restricted in advertising the new special ed program until it went through all those steps.
And there's no problem with our doing an addendum that where Kathy and I, the administrative committee, talked about the fact that the addendum should change. So if you wanted to change requirements for this program, the addendum is not the right thing that follows the catalog. But if it's something brand new, like a certificate of bakery, that's the
Mike, are we talking about a physical paper addendum or strictly electronic?
At this point, we don't actually publish a paper addendum. We put a PDF out there for the addendum. We put an HTML addendum out and eventually the catalog itself.
So I take it that maybe the catalog discussion is something we want to send to committees to see, you know, who, in terms of some of the opinions about what we want, and it would be, of course, the committees that are looking at the courses and programs and see if that's appropriate, and then they can talk to their constituencies. So I think we'll probably be sending it to GAC and to curricular review.
I just want to find out if there are any other issues that people want to raise as opposed to further discussion on the issues that have been raised.
Ben?
Mike. Microphone. The publication process, and I'm wondering at what point would you might be able to put together some type of a PDF document that would carry us through the summer. How long is that publication process? Everything's done by March, then you'll put it together into a formal catalog, and then it'll go to the publisher. Is it possible that you could get a PDF document while it's at the publisher's to get people through?
The PDF production takes almost 1 printed production, so you might get it in July. That's fine.
Cecile?
Well, I'm thinking that new programs are probably the smallest amount of changes that are being made. The biggest chunk is probably changes to programs and changes to courses. And for that, I think a later deadline is more important. So for that reason, I would really prefer a catalog in August so that departments have enough time to get their changes through and don't have to wait 2 years for those changes to take effect.
Okay. So some good things raised here, and I think it's something we'll want to continue having this discussion go forward.
Kathy, can we just get a quick show of hands?
Okay.
People who are okay with the catalog not being available until August.
All right. Show of hands. People who are okay
with
it, catalog not being available until August.
And online, how many people would be okay with not getting the catalog until August?
That's fine with me.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And in contrast, those who really, really, really want to have a new catalog for the academic year available in May.
I don't get a vote.
Sure you do. What the hell? this is not a resolution. It's just a preference. So you want to put yourself with it, really want it in May? Okay.
Online people who like to have catalog in May? Dead silence. All right. So I think people are tending towards the later deadline in August is what I'm seeing. So that can help formulate the discussion. All right. Any other discussion on this? Let's go ahead and take it into public comments questions. We're going to have people come up to one of the front microphones because that's going to be easiest. So whoever would like to speak, come grab a microphone.
Hi there. My name is Megan DiMario, and I'm here with Ross Embler from the Development Office, the sector, and then Susan Sagai from the Center of Global Change and Arctic Systems Research. And we're just here to talk quickly about the Employee Giving Initiative. And that initiative is going to run from April 9th to May 11th. You may have recently seen the postcard, great postcard with their face on the cover. Glenn Jude is going to be the co-chair. And basically, we're going to send out a variety of communication via email and the Cornerstone, just encouraging employees to give back. We're really fortunate because a lot of employees already do give back, so thank you to those who do. And that's our goal, and we just want to provide that opportunity. And we're going to leave some material on the back table for you. But I wanted to give Susan a chance to talk about the fund that we're going to be featuring this year. So.
Hi, I'm Susan Sagai, and I'm the Associate Director for the Center for Global Change, and I've noticed there's a couple of you around here that serve on our Science Steering Board. But one of the major activities we've done for the past 20 years is we conduct a student competition for Global Change Student Research Awards. And what's unique about these awards is we do peer review these proposals, and then the students are allowed to propose an interdisciplinary project that goes across colleges and across disciplines that addresses global change. And in the process of doing this, they have the opportunity to actually take ownership of research as an undergraduate or graduate student. This is their money if they are successful, and they are able to use it and manage it as they see fit. And as a result of doing this for 20 years, what we've seen is that their major professors really enjoy this, but the students become really owners of their own projects. They become advocates for why spending of research dollars, because now it's their money, not their major professor's money. And they also tend to take the feedback they get back from experts in their fields that are coming away from the university as opposed to their independent committees, their committees that they see every day, a lot more seriously than they do the people they see every day. And what we've also found is awardees go on to serve fields within Alaska once they finish. People, as a process of doing this, they get involved in a project they really enjoy, and a lot of our awardees stay in Alaska. And we've got 16 that are on the faculty or various investigator people on campus. And so, but one of the problems, like everyone else, we're running into problems with funding. But we were very fortunate in the sense that Judy Bellis in 2010 established the Robert Bellis Global Change Research Endowment to fund Global Change Research at the university. Unfortunately, because of the current stock market situation, it hasn't been gaining funding fast enough. And so what we would like to do is to highlight that people could give small amounts into the spendable part of this account so that we can actually get these students out there, as opposed to right now where we have a situation where I'm getting between 50 to 70 proposals a year on the maybe the fund. And so, and these proposals have gotten better and better as the years have gone on. And so I have left some materials on the back table, which is our newsletter from
both 2010 and 2011. The 2010 one is very useful because it has quotes from our various alumni who are still doing Arctic research, and the current one focuses on the species of the
Thank you very much. If you've got any more questions about endowment giving, talk to Megan or Susan.
Thanks,
and next.
Good afternoon. I'm Ed Husted. I'm head of the paralegal studies program down at our community college. I'm also chair of our CTC Academic Council, which gives me the privilege of sitting, as I have now for several years, on Reiner's and your Faculty Senate Curriculum Review Committee. It's been interesting listening to your comments. My compatriot Charlie Dexter and I are here this afternoon to discuss with you very briefly something involving the catalog. Interesting also that you have just talked about that. I'm not wanting to take too much time, so I've prepared a one-page handout that gives some of the history of the community college here at UAF. When you have nothing else to do, you can review that. I'm not going to review it with you now. I just want to point out that UAF is unique, probably as unique as any other university in the country. In fact, our strategic plan says no other single university in the country is as multidimensional as UAF. And the strategic plan points out that we have three totally separate and distinct units here. One, of course, a world-class college, university, schools, that teach, that do research. But secondly, specifically mentioned, TVC, as it used to be called, is a community college, uses that term, which is situated here in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, intended to provide educational opportunities to people in this community. And third, separate and distinct, outreach to rural Alaska communities and Alaska Natives. One of the problems that we've struggled with And what we're bringing to you today will illustrate this, is that those last two have been combined under one unit, the College of Rural and Community Development. In January of 2009, after having struggled with some of these attempts to assimilate two totally different approaches to educational opportunity, we presented to the Chancellor a request that he help us start considering making TVC, as it was then known, a totally separate community college within the UAF system. The Chancellor from the very beginning met with us and said, I'm just not going to do that for a variety of reasons, which were logical, and he explained to us. So that was off the table. We then looked at doing the Prince William Sound approach, that is a totally separate community college, which has no connection whatsoever other than articulation agreements. And we didn't want to do that. In fact, we couldn't. The reasons require that a unit attempting to do that must provide at least 30% of its funding from the local community. And we decided the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly probably wouldn't look with favor upon a request for 30% of our budget. So, over the next year, year and a half, lots of meetings, lots of discussion, we put together what seemed to be a fairly decent compromise. Right now, we are a college within a college, which is part of the problem. We do have a dean who was with us for 6 months and has left, so right now we have an interim dean. And that person sits on the chancellor's cabinet. So we have been elevated, we're afraid, in name only, to the level of being a college. We have now come under, this is where we are now. And this system, frankly, has worked fairly well. I was just talking to Kathy Winfrey, and after talking with her, I'm not sure how well it has worked. But the PRCD is now divided into 14 departments, six of which are uniquely CTC. That is, all of the coursework, all of the programs, the degrees, the certificates are awarded and taught only through CTC. So we have a CTC Academic Council, of which I'm chair, and that process prevents the extra time involved in going through another academic council, the CRCD. CRCD has the other eight departments, which go through CRCD because at least two of the units within CRCD teach the courses. Usually it's CTC and one other of the rural campuses, but not necessarily so. I find that since that system was set up about a year and a half ago, and by the way, we were allowed to change our name. It's the fourth or fifth name change in 20 years. We are now UAS Community and Technical College, also known as CTC. But at any rate, from my viewpoint as chair of the CTC Academic Council, we've gotten lots of things done. We've gotten the paramedic program through as an AAS degree. We've completely reorganized the culinary and hospitality program, including a new certificate, and some other things that I think have worked very well. The assimilated program, such as Kathy's Allied Health, which goes through CRCD because it's taught in the outlying communities as well. I'm not sure what you have to say about that. But at any rate, here's where we are now. Without our knowledge, Charlie is going to go into this, a catalog change was made, which we think just totally reduces CTC to nothing but a college in name only, and I'll let Charlie take it from there.
Greetings. Charlie Dexter here, Professor of Applied Business and Accounting with Community and Technical College. For 23 years, I've been the chair of the Applied Business and Accounting Department. Fortunately, someone else has stepped up to the plate this year, and as Sukumar and Reiner know, it's been my responsibility to submit curriculum changes that then are reflected in the catalog, sometimes to their chagrin. But it's always been a faculty function where the department determines curriculum changes. Any changes in the catalog affecting our degrees come from the faculty, signed off by the chair, goes to Ed's curriculum committee, and then on to what used to be Sukumar as the curricular review, and now goes to Reiner. Well, let me take you back to a week ago last Friday. Late in the afternoon, I got a real surprise because I picked up a rumor that all of the community campuses, including the Community and Technical College, Cusco campus, Bristol Bay, all of them, had been eliminated from the catalog heading that said where the department was housed. And it had all been replaced by CRCD. I couldn't believe that, and so I checked with Michelle Renfrew in Marketing and Communications, who's printing the catalog, and by golly, Monday afternoon, I got a response that yes. And it was done under the direction of Associate Vice Chancellor Penny and Vice Chancellor Bernice Joseph in written documentation to the registrar to change everything, to eliminate all community campus references from the headers of the catalog, and all of the programs like mine, which is exclusively a community and technical college curriculum, two certificates, two AAS degrees, and three occupational endorsements, all references to where we were housed disappeared. So I had a meeting with Bernice, and she said, yes, she had it done. There were some other discussions, but essentially that was it, period. Since then, I just found out during the break that the chancellor has directed registrar to redo everything and put it back the way it was. And quite frankly, that's a demonstration of some of the challenges we've had. For me, it is a gross breach of protocol when an administrator, a vice chancellor, and an associate vice chancellor unilaterally change catalogs, and this is a major change to the catalog, without any discussion whatsoever with the affected department faculty, no discussion with the chair, no discussion with our curriculum review, and even no discussion with Michelle Salder, who is our interim dean. It was a shock I got on Friday. I'm sure there are people listening here at rural campuses that don't realize they have been eliminated from their programs in the catalog, too. Thank you for your time.
So exactly what do you want from us? I mean, I hear you're saying you're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore. But which of you is going to immolate yourself in protest?
We brought no resolution or anything. I think this was our effort to simply keep you posted as to what's going on. It's continuing. Yeah, we're mad as hell.
And we will be even madder as hell if the past practice of the Community and Technical College graduates are not introduced by departments through the Community and Technical College in here in 2 weeks, but introduced as CRCD's students. And you will have total thermonuclear war if we're written out of the graduation ceremony.
Charlie, do you hear that that's going to happen?
I have not been able, I did not heard that firsthand. I waited to talk to Bernice until I got it firsthand from marketing and communications that we've been written out. But we'll all know at the student awards banquet, and we'll know at graduation.
Well, yeah, the...
There's been no request to change anything about that. I give you vouch for that. Yes.
Yeah, the student awards breakfast has been changed. For example, Allied Health has won awards system-wide, whereas previously it's been each of the individual nursing, dental assistant programs, somewhat. So CTC is basically eliminated from the student awards breakfast, as far as I understand.
Yeah, and to answer your question, we're not looking for anything from the Faculty Senate right now. It's our job to just make you aware that there's trouble in River City, and we'll work on it and not come back to you unless we can't resolve it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Any other public comments? No, then that takes us to governance reports. Do we have someone from staff council? Nope. Do I have someone from ASUAS? Aha, I see Robert here.
I'll be giving President Freitag the floor. She's in the meeting right now. So during spring break, we went down to Juneau. Eight students went down to Juneau for a follow-up trip, which was really successful. We got to listen in on the Capitol and operating that they were discussing about the university. Representative Fairclough had amended and put the advising component back in, which we're very happy about that. We also talked to a couple senators and legislators about new engineering buildings for both the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Anchorage. So they're trying to get funding for new engineering buildings, which they propose like only one. Funding for one will get probably be proposed, but that's just how the legislator works most times. This week, we also discussed the budget for student government as a whole. I don't know if you guys know, but each student that takes 3 credits or more gets charged a $35 fee per semester. That's $70 a year if they're a student. So we approximately oversee $500,000. So we had to distribute that. Our executive committee did that last night. And so we're getting that ready to be proposed and approved by the Board of Regents for their June meeting. We also have elections coming up during Spring Fest weekend, which is April 25th through the 27th. Petitions are due this Friday at 5 o'clock in the ASUAF office, which is only 100 signatures if a student does one of them, so we're encouraging that. So that's all I have for this week. So thanks for listening.
Any questions for Robert? Nope. Robert, thank you for coming. United Academics, Melanie.
Hi. I've been bringing bad news. Last time we were here, I told you huge or outrageous increases in your health care costs. Most of you have noticed that it's going to be outrageous. Depending on what your plan is, we're looking at a
50% to fourfold increase in your cost for the same health insurance you were getting before. So that's what I've been concentrating on since the last time I saw you in my role with United Academics. And there are a couple of things that I would call your attention to in that regard. Open enrollment is coming up in 2 weeks, and you have to decide what to do. We've been put in a difficult position by our administration in that we have one health plan. The only differences between your three options are very small changes or very small differences in your dental coverage and what your deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums are. If you look at the differences in the deductibles and out-of-pocket maximums and you compare them to the differences in the payroll contributions, unless you are one of the small number of people who is an employee in insuring yourself and your kids only, and you spend a lot of money on health care, your individual financially advantageous option is to enroll in the high deductible health plan. Everything else got your plan. The dilemma there is that administration is not accounting for us to do that. They don't see our employees as economically rational, and they've left a plan in place now for the second year in a row that creates an incentive for you to do this but doesn't account for people to actually do it in the numbers that if we are financially rational people we will do. So that's just out there as a problem. We ran a deficit this year, or we're projected to run a deficit this year. If people elect for the economically rational option for their health care coverage, the health plan will run a big deficit again in the coming year. It's irresponsible. There are other things going on where the health care is concerned. I mean, that's not the thing that is driving these big increases. The big increases are just a long-term trend of an average of about 10% annual increases in our actual cost of our health care bills. And that's not the administration of the plan, that's the actual bills that are incurred. We're self-insured and we don't have a reinsurance or stop loss to protect us from the kind of ups and downs. We need to do something to address that long-term cost curve. That's our big problem. And we're not getting much traction in the Joint Health Care Committee, which is where contractually we are supposed to be. We're supposed to have our voice as employees to do that. So that's my little bit on health care, my personal obsession. But also, if you would like to participate in what's going on in the union, hear more comment, there are a couple of meetings coming up that I call your attention to. The first one is this week, Wednesday, from 11 to 12 in 309 Constitution Hall. The executive board of United Academics will be meeting. That is a public meeting unless it goes into executive session, but expect it to be public. Your representative assembly will be meeting on April 20th and 21st here in Fairbanks, and that also is a public meeting. Usually occurs off campus. It's been at Sophie Station the last couple of years. I haven't heard the location yet, but those are opportunities for you to come hear what's going on, and I think there's opportunity for public comments as well. That's all.
Thank you. Any questions, Melanie? Elizabeth?
I'm just curious, at this point, is there anything that anyone can do to, you know, you voiced your public comment, but what would it take to change this?
Short answer, there's nothing. In the short term, I don't think, and there are others at the table who, Jane Weber and Stefan Golick are also both on the Joint Health Care Committee. In the short term, I don't think it's likely that anything for your cost for next year can be done. We asked for, and I forgot to mention this, but it was communicated in our emails. We asked for, the Joint Health Care Committee passed a motion asking for the university to kick in some of the deficit from this year because of this accounting problem that I just called your attention to, which continues, and they said no. they said, no, we've got a collective bargaining agreement, and this would be bargaining outside of the collective bargaining agreement. Yeah. So in the short term, no. I think in the long term, we do need to be active as a faculty and as a set of employees, not just our individual bargaining units, if we want to see a solution. And this is my personal characterization, so there's my disclaimer. The attitude we've been getting from administration is this is just the way it is, and you guys are actually fairly fortunate. Healthcare costs are going up all over the place, and ours are too. But there are a couple of things that I would point out in response to that. One is that costs are substantially higher here in Alaska for reasons that are not entirely clear and not necessarily entirely to be just written off as outside of our control. Secondly, that if you look at the other employees in Alaska State, which if you just go to the website and you can find their benefits page, their health care looks like ours did 3 years ago. And they're dealing with the same constraints we are. They're self-insured. They live in Alaska. But somehow they haven't fallen off the cliff that we've fallen off of.
Is that because they don't hire smokers?
That's it. Yeah. Bill, one of the, you know, in their little Q&A thing that they sent out recently, they made sort of a somewhat snide remark about how the Joint Healthcare Committee had not produced any viable alternative to what they were doing. If I remember, one of those things was to enlarge the pool, right? And there were others. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. it's not that we have not discussed ideas. Certainly enlarging the pool is something we had a subcommittee that spent, you know, 6 months sort of exploring some aspects of that. We also asked in December for their consultants to do some exploration of whether or not we might be able to establish some clinic access now that our deductibles have gone up so high that, you know.
I think that was back in October.
I think we started, yeah. So that's been around a while. They haven't done, we asked for an update at this meeting last week, 2 weeks ago, and the consultant came on the phone and said, oh, yeah, I have that number that you gave me. And I've been meaning to call it, basically. So he hadn't done anything. And the number was just for somebody at the school district who has that kind of a contract. You know, it wasn't to actually. So we've, you know, that's just a couple of examples of things. But generally speaking, I mean, you know, that word viable was in that statement. And I think that what happens is that proposals that we make tend to get written off just right away. And they don't get followed up on, and there's only so much we can do as committee members to actually really explore what the nuts and the bolts are of, say, merging ourselves with state employees to make the pool larger, which has some administrative and potentially legal barriers. We don't know, but it's a bit beyond our jurisdiction to be making those phone calls and doing those things. But we can't force them.
But we do keep bringing that up. I think we're going to continue. I mean, that seems to many of us like the most bottom line.
Yeah. But we need to come forward. Well, thank you guys for at it. It's got to be unbelievably frustrating.
So, are there any other questions or comments?
Oh,
Melanie?
I have one more thing. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Melanie.
I'm going on sabbatical. there's going to be a vacancy on the Joint Healthcare Committee shortly. If you're interested,
this hot potato.
Let us know.
All right, UAFT, Jane.
Nothing to.
Okay. That brings us to members' comments, questions, announcements, and I've got an announcement. There are admin services open forum meetings. Originally, they were supposed to be today and tomorrow. The one this afternoon has been moved to April 9th at 9 a.m. It will be available on rural campuses via eLive.
The one tomorrow is here on the UAF campus. It's in the Board of Regents conference room. That's Butrovich 109, for those of you who aren't familiar with it. It will be at 3:30 p.m., and basically this is an opportunity to talk with those folks in, associated with administrative services, and to get your input in and hear from them what's going on. So if you have any interest, I would try to make either the one in person tomorrow or go ahead and plan to do the one via eLive next week, Monday at 9 a.m. in the morning.
Are those listed on the website somewhere?
Probably admin services, but I can give these to Jane, and she can forward it to everyone.
Thanks.
Any other questions, comments, announcements, anything you think we should know, Jane?
I just wanted to remind people about the Planning Strategically for Promotion Tenure Workshop on April 27th, which is Spring Fest Day. There are no classes. It's from 10 to 12 in Butrovich 109, and the flyer is back on the table.
This is definitely something you want your younger faculty to attend, so make sure you get it widely distributed in your college, if at all possible. This is very useful.
Yeah, and I'll remark that the people who need it don't necessarily know it's useful, so it actually is good for you to take some action and tell them.
Any other comments, questions? With that, let's adjourn. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Hello? Hello?